After the movie Free Willy became a hit, word got out that the star of the film, a killer whale named Keiko, was sick and still living in a tiny pool in a Mexican amusement park. Fans were outraged. Kids demanded his release. I'm Daniel Alarcón. From Serial Productions and the New York Times comes The Good Whale, a story about the wildly ambitious science experiment to return Keiko to the ocean. Listen to new episodes on Thursdays. Want early access to the whole show? Subscribe to The Times at nytimes.com/podcasts to listen on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, 49-51, three Republican senators break ranks and end their party's latest and possibly last plan to repeal the Affordable Care Act. And what's so bad about Obamacare anyway? It's Friday, July 28th. Tom.
Hey.
Hey. Where are you?
I'm in the Senate press gallery, just where you want to be at 2:11 a.m.
I'm so tired, Tom. I was asleep on the fifth floor. All right. We're going to jump in. Tom Kaplan covers Congress. Tom, what just happened?
Well, in some ways, it's as simple as the seven-year Republican quest to dismantle the Affordable Care Act collapsed. This certainly seems like the end of the road for Republicans.
Let's talk about what actually happened. At 1:30 this morning on the Senate floor, take us through the drama.
So the whole question here over the past couple of days, there was a hurdle earlier this week for Republicans, which was getting the votes to start debate on health care. It was a big question whether they could do that. They managed to get the votes. Then the big question was, what would be the bill that ultimately they would vote on?
Right.
Tonight, we got that answer, which was late tonight, Mitch McConnell, the majority leader, unveiled what was a really bare bones piece of legislation, nothing like what their ambitions once were. Mm-hmm. The real goal was just come up with a bill that can pass. Didn't really matter what was in it. Just the idea was pass a bill and then you can work something out with the House and come up with a broader proposal that people could agree to. Kind of hard to see how that could actually happen, but the idea was at least keep this process alive.
Right. The message was do something. Just make a leap
exactly.
of faith
something,
and pass something.
Anything. I mean, it got to the point where people said it doesn't even matter what's in the bill. The bill's never going to become law. We just need to pass something.
Right.
So that takes us to around midnight when the Senate was supposed to vote. For a very long time, the vote was delayed, and you could watch from the gallery upstairs as senators crowded around Lisa Murkowski, who was someone who it seemed like might vote no. We saw Vice President Pence talking to Senator McCain for a very long time.
So this is last-minute lobbying.
Yeah, yeah. It very quickly became clear that, for one, the vote was not happening, which suggested something was going awry. And then you could just tell watching the body language, watching people on the floor of the Senate, that the votes weren't there.
So when the vote was in fact taken, what was the final outcome numerically?
So this whole time, the magic number has been two. McConnell could lose two votes, and then you have the vice president come in, break a 50-50 tie. And in this case, you sort of thought there probably would be two no votes going in, Senator Murkowski and Susan Collins from Maine, and they both voted no. And then it was all eyes on John McCain. All along, as people thought about, you know, who could be a no vote, he was, I don't think, seen as someone who, in the end, would be the one to stand up and end this. And he voted no, and that was it.
It's also just incredibly striking to think about the fact that the 2008 Republican presidential nominee, the man who lost to Barack Obama, is now the United States senator who will be held responsible for protecting his signature healthcare law.
Yeah, no, it really is. The position he's in this week, when you think about everything, his brain cancer diagnosis, coming back this week, I mean, I'm leaving out, we've had so many sort of dramatic sagas this week, I'm leaving out one earlier this week, which was, will he come back to vote? His return was hailed as providing a critical vote to allow this process to move forward.
Right, for the bill, right.
Right, exactly. That was just, you know, a couple days ago. And here we are on the complete opposite end of the spectrum.
So, Tom, as we've started to explain, the plan that was voted on this morning was already far less than what Republicans had hoped for. They gave up on a repeal and replace proposal. Then they gave up on a full repeal. And they're down to this incredibly minimalist version of repeal. And now that fails. So what does that mean for the Republican Party?
Well, if you go back to the start of this year, this was priority number one. Mm-hmm. You finally have President Trump. You're not going to pass a repeal bill and have it vetoed. And this was the big goal. This was supposed to be success number one on a road of lots of successes. And the House stumbled badly and struggled to pass a bill. They ultimately did, although it was a bill that President Trump himself later criticized. Then the Senate struggled for weeks and months and ultimately has now come to this outcome. And we're now 7 months into this year, and the Republican Congress with a Republican president, the Senate confirmed a Supreme Court justice, and that's something they can point to. But they have not passed any significant legislation. Now, the question that looms is, what's next? So tax reform was supposed to be big achievement number two. And that's a famously difficult task that now they can certainly make a go at. But failure on healthcare certainly doesn't inspire confidence for Republicans as a governing party, rather than as a party that, you know, complained for years and criticized for years when we talk about healthcare, but then given the opportunity to put in place their own vision, ended with a swing and a miss here.
Tom, thank you, and I hope you get to go to bed soon.
You too. Thank you.
So, Mr. President, this is clearly a disappointing moment. From skyrocketing costs to plummeting choices and collapsing markets, our constituents have suffered through an awful lot under Obamacare. We thought they deserved better. It's why I and many of my colleagues did as we promised and voted to repeal this failed law.
We'll be right back.
I'm Jonathan Swan. I'm a White House reporter for the New York Times. I have a pretty unsentimental view of what we do. Our job as reporters is to dig out information that powerful people don't want published, to take you into rooms that you would not otherwise have access to understand how some of the big decisions shaping our country are being made. And then, painstakingly, to go back and check with sources, check with public documents, make sure the information is correct. This is not something you can outsource to AI. There's no robot that can go and talk to someone who was in the Situation Room and find out what was really said. In order to get actually original information that's not public, that requires human sources, we actually need journalists to do that. So as you may have gathered from this long riff, I'm asking you to consider subscribing to the New York Times. Independent journalism is important, and without you, we simply can't do it.
Friday morning's vote was the culmination of 6 months of work by Republicans at the expense of nearly all other legislation to get rid of the Affordable Care Act. What is it about Obamacare that its opponents so object to?
Coming together to stop Obamacare is the essence of pragmatism, because it is self-evident this isn't working.
Our goal all the way through this is to protect the American people from the awful effects of this law.
And it's failing. It's failing the people, yeah. It's failing the middle class, failing small business owners, failing.
The death spiral of Obamacare continues.
We have a disastrous health care law.
This law isn't working. It is a disaster.
Obamacare is a disaster. It's failing in every front. It's too expensive. It gives horrible coverage. It was gotten by a lie.
The allegedly Affordable Care Act is not only not affordable, but it's a job killer.
And the people are sick of it.
Abby Goodenough, it feels like to understand Obamacare's flaws, we have to understand what healthcare was like before the Affordable Care Act came into law. How many people are we talking about here who did not have insurance before the law was passed?
We're talking about 47 million people,
wow.
Nearly 18% of the population.
So what exactly did Obamacare set out to do when it was crafted?
So 10 years ago, 20 years ago, if you didn't have insurance through your job or through a government program like Medicare or Medicaid, you had to go out and buy it for yourself on what's called the individual health insurance market. And it could be really expensive or impossible to even get, depending how healthy you were, because insurers back then were allowed to reject potential customers based on their medical history. So the big shining goal, of course, was universal health care.
Right.
Health care for everybody who needed it and wanted it.
We did not come to fear the future. We came here to shape it. I still believe we can act, even when it's hard.
And if that meant the government helping to pay for it or provide it, that would be part of it.
But that's not exactly what happened, of course. What happened through the legislative process of Obamacare going from an idea with those noble goals to what it became?
Well, certainly with this complex and huge a change to domestic policy, a lot of compromises were made.
And look at how this bill was written. Can you say it was done openly? With transparency and accountability? Without backroom deals and struck behind closed doors? Hidden from the people? Hell no, you can't!
And this whole legislative process ever since has been bitterly decried by Republicans who say that they had no voice in the process, that much of it, if not most of it, was hashed out behind closed doors by Democrats.
Let me just say in the beginning that if they were proud of this bill, they wouldn't be doing it this way. They wouldn't be jamming it through in the middle of the night.
And, of course, it did pass famously without a single Republican vote.
The yeas are 220. The nays are 215. The bill is passed.
So, very contentiously, on March 23rd, 2010, the Affordable Care Act is signed into law. And, famously, we have the Vice President calling it a big leaping deal.
Today, after almost a century of trying, today, after over a year of debate, today, after all the votes have been tallied, health insurance reform becomes law in the United States of America.
And what did the Affordable Care Act actually do?
It created this so-called individual mandate, which required most Americans to sign up for health insurance or pay a tax penalty. To help them do that, it created these online marketplaces called exchanges for people to buy the insurance.
Health insurance exchanges will be created, a competitive marketplace where uninsured people and small businesses will finally be able to purchase affordable quality insurance.
And to make sure everyone could afford the insurance, it provided subsidies for people with incomes of up to 400% of the poverty level, which is about $97,000 a year for a family of four, to help them pay their premiums for the insurance policies. And of course, another thing was the intent to expand Medicaid to cover many more low-income Americans in every single state, and ended up being 31 states at this point. But the intent was to cover just about all low-income adults around the country.
And what was the impact of those changes?
Well, in the beginning, as you might recall, we had this disastrous rollout of the federal insurance exchange, healthcare.gov.
Website problems prevented some people from signing up.
It didn't work.
Healthcare.gov was down for about 6 hours Monday morning and then again in the afternoon.
They had to completely rebuild it as people were trying to sign up. It's a huge embarrassment for Obama and a huge setback.
In the coming weeks, we are going to get it working as smoothly as it's supposed to.
Just gave critics of the law red meat.
Will enrollment glitches become provider payment glitches? Will patients show up at the doctor's office or hospital only to be told that they are not in the system?
At the same time, though, you had many people's old insurance plans, which were no longer compliant with the law because they didn't meet the Affordable Care Act's coverage standards, being canceled.
No matter what you've heard, if you like your doctor or health care plan, you can keep it.
And Obama had said repeatedly, if you like your plan, you can keep your plan.
If you like your current insurance, you keep that insurance.
If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. If you like your health care plan, you can keep your health care plan.
I guess he hadn't anticipated that the plans wouldn't conform to the law he had crafted.
I'm not sure what he was anticipating, but it was definitely a miscalculation to keep saying that. Mm. And it remains today. Trump is saying even this week.
28 times it was a lie. You can keep your doctor. You can keep your plan. All lies.
And along the way, 2 years and change after the law was passed, we had a big Supreme Court decision on the constitutionality of the law itself. You know, a lot of people thought this law might never go into effect because the Supreme Court was going to declare the whole thing unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm. So the health care reform law remains the law of the land. The Affordable Care Act has been authorized to continue by the United States Supreme Court. A 5-4 decision. The Chief Justice of the United States, John Roberts, siding with the majority, saying that under the tax writing provisions of the Constitution, the individual mandate is, in fact, constitutional. We're getting reaction.
The biggest thing that the Supreme Court did was to make the expansion of Medicaid under the law optional, and every state could decide whether it was going to do it or not.
The court has struck down that third part of the decision, that is, forcing the states to expand their Medicaid program.
That was kind of a surprise. Nobody was expecting it. But the Supreme Court decided that it was coercive on the federal government's part mm-hmm. to make states expand Medicaid if they didn't want to. And so, lo and behold, a huge number of states at the time decided to hold firm. Their governors and legislatures were anti-Obamacare to begin with, mm-hmm. and they were not going to expand Medicaid.
And how has that affected the process now?
Well, what it's meant is that far fewer low-income people have gotten insurance under the Affordable Care Act than the law's authors envisioned. We have seen more states, including more Republican states, buying into the Medicaid expansion and accepting it over the last few years. We're now down to 19 states around the country who still have refused to expand Medicaid under the ACA. Many of them are in the South. Most, if not all of them, are Republican-led or were at the time the decision was made.
So, Abby, you're traveling the country as Obamacare is rolling out. It was your beat at the time to sort mm-hmm. of find people and their stories and what was happening to them as their lives intersected with the law. So what kinds of stories were you hearing from people, and are you hearing from people who are unhappy with the law?
I would say the people who feel the most shortchanged by the Affordable Care Act, who have received coverage from it, are those who don't qualify for subsidies to help with the cost. They don't get any financial aid. They are solidly middle class. They're certainly not affluent, mm-hmm. but maybe they earn $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year. The cost of their premium, it might be $1,400 a month for one person in one of the more expensive states. It might be over $2,000 a month for a couple in one of the most expensive states. It's more than their mortgage. It's more than their car payment. It's more than any other expense. And the premiums are increasing every year, and they're mad. They're really mad about it.
And Abby, why are those premiums at that point rising?
Partly because of what is one of the most, if not the most beloved piece of this law, which is the ban on insurers discriminating against people who are sick and either charging them more or not allowing them to have coverage.
So this is the phrase pre-existing conditions.
Pre-existing conditions. So because Obamacare forces insurers to cover everybody, including people with pre-existing conditions, some of those people have really expensive health conditions. Mm-hmm. Those are the people the insurers kicked out before or never agreed to cover before. Mm-hmm. Now they're covering them, and they're expensive. And to help offset the costs, the insurers are raising premiums for everyone.
So how do the complaints you're hearing from the people you've met around the country compare to the grievances that Republicans have with the Affordable Care Act to this day?
This law is hurting people right now. I mean, look at these premium increases.
I mean, the complaints that the Republicans are making are pretty much the same as the complaints of the people who are paying too much for premiums. Mm-hmm.
These are real families facing huge premium increases. And on top of this, you got a massive deductible, so it doesn't even feel like you have insurance in the first place.
And, you know, the Republicans are speaking largely, I think, on behalf of that more middle class segment of Americans who don't qualify for government assistance. They're not getting any help. They're paying full freight for these insurance plans. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these people are healthy, too. Like, they haven't had the experience of being sick, being really sick. They've been lucky. and they look back at the day before Obamacare when they could have a much skinnier plan that didn't cover nearly as much. Maybe it didn't cover maternity care. Hmm. Maybe it was just kind of a catastrophic plan that would pay some limited amount if you ended up in the hospital after a car accident, but they were okay with taking that risk. A lot of these people feel like the government should not be deciding for them what kind of insurance is smartest to have. They want to make that decision. And if it's a decision to have a plan that doesn't cover much, that's fine as long as it's their decision.
And what is the real big picture Republican narrative about what's awful about Obamacare? I ask because in all this debate, especially right now, it's hard to know what's genuinely objectionable about the Affordable Care Act and what's just politics.
It's two things, I'd say. It's government overreach, this idea that the government should be deciding what kind of insurance you should have. Mm-hmm. And it's cost to the government. It's the idea that we've created this whole new entitlement in the form of subsidies and that we've expanded another big entitlement, Medicaid, to many, many more people. You know, the Republicans love to describe many of the Medicaid expansion enrollees as able-bodied.
Medicaid has expanded dramatically into zones it was never designed for. And I think the American people would support reforms that had work requirements attached to people who are able-bodied adults.
Suggesting that they don't really deserve it because they're overall healthy. They don't have disabilities. They're not bedridden.
It's not designed for able-bodied adults. We want to get those people off of Medicaid, into a job, and into market-based insurance.
Able-bodied Americans who should probably should at least see if there are other options for them. If
they're not the typical maybe person in the past you would have thought of who qualified for government health care.
So you've outlined all these problems with the Affordable Care Act. What does it mean now that after months of single-minded focus, Republicans couldn't even pass a bill that begins to undo and unravel the Affordable Care Act?
I think it means that this law has been around and in effect for 3.5 years now, and people have really decided that they like pieces of it. Mm-hmm. Enough of the country is benefiting from various provisions, whether it's Medicaid expansion or the pre-existing conditions provision, or, you know, your kid being on your insurance plan when they're 25 years old and don't have a job, that there's enough pieces of this that various people aren't willing to let go of, that members of Congress are going to fight to keep them. And they're all at odds about what to keep and what to ditch, and they just can't figure out how to do it.
Thank you, Abby. Really appreciate it.
Sure thing.
Here's what else you need to know today. America's highest military officer says that transgender people will continue to serve in the armed services following President Trump's announcement on Twitter that they would be banned from the military. General Joseph Dunford, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, said the military's policy towards transgender people would not change until the president and the Secretary of Defense had issued a formal order. In a sign of the confusion surrounding the issue, the White House referred questions about the president's tweets to the Defense Department.
The White House will work with the Department of Defense and all of the relevant parties to make sure that we fully implement this policy moving forward.
While the Defense Department referred questions back to the White House.
What is the policy, and was the president aware that he can't make policy changes via statements on Twitter? Because the Pentagon is saying...
I think he was making the announcement of the policy change.
So the policy hasn't yet been formulated?
Well, like I said, they are going to have to work out the details on how that all moves forward to lawfully implement that policy change from this point.
And
not since British troops paid a visit in 1814, as the White House had so many fires to put out.
In an expletive-filled interview with the New Yorker magazine, the president's new communications director, Anthony Scaramucci, called the White House chief of staff, Reince Priebus, a, quote, paranoid schizophrenic leaker, and vowed to get him fired. Scaramucci also suggested that White House aides would be prosecuted for leaking embarrassing information about him and said, quote, I have 3 to 4 people I'll fire tomorrow, because he suspected them of being disloyal to the president. Scaramucci later released a statement but did not apologize. Quote, I sometimes use colorful language. I will refrain in this arena, he said, but not give up the passionate fight for Donald Trump's agenda. The Daily is produced by Theo Balcom, Lindsay Garrison, Rachel Quester, Andy Mills, and Christopher Wirth. Lisa Tobin is our executive producer. Samantha Hennig is our editorial director. Our theme music is by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsverk of Wonderly. Special thanks to Martha Daniel, Michaela Bouchard, Peter Sale, and Pedro Rosado. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you Monday.